Welcome to Natural Recovery from Suffering. This is Scott Killaby. Somebody asked me to talk about triggers. Okay, well, what is a trigger? Now, after developing repression inquiry, I see triggers very differently because people respond differently to relational triggers. And so that's part of the confusion is like I've worked with people who, when they get triggered by someone, they get angry. I've worked with someone else in the next session who, when they get triggered, they just walk off quietly or shut down. It's a trigger in both situations. So a trigger is really our trauma response from the past to a current situation in which we're trying to protect ourselves. It doesn't look like that necessarily, but that's really what it is. The trigger is there to protect us and to so that we can continue on in and survive by putting forth something false that protects us, and it gets us love and approval. Triggers really have more to do with what's going on our side, way more than what's going on the side of the person who triggers us. And when I say that, somebody will step in and say, well, what about a person who's really malignant and mean in relationship? I'll say, right, that doesn't absolve that person of what they're doing. But even in those situations, when we empower ourselves to set boundaries, we do our inner processing, we're going to find ways out of those relationships or not to get in them. And to say that people are just complete victims of others is really disempowering, when basically we now know that anyone can process buried emotions. So everyone's empowered, potentially, and I think disempowered to say, well, because of the nature of my relationship, I can't listen to what you're saying. In other words, I can't take responsibility for my side of the trigger because my partner's an asshole. I don't buy it. Because, you know, I mean, how do we get free if we keep shadowing that out? But if we take ownership, a trigger is just so helpful. And so we capitalize on triggers here. Because here's what I used to do as a teacher. When people would express that they were triggered about something, I would say, one, just let it be there. See it. Maybe there's some words or images coming into awareness with feelings there. Just notice that you're the awareness. And this is all coming and going to you. And you're fully open to it, allow it. Such and such. Those kind of pointers. Well, those never get to buried emotions because it's only dealing with what's arising. But worse than that, it doesn't acknowledge what the trigger really is. So the trigger is a self-protective state in which some false identity has come up for the person to protect them from the buried emotions. The buried emotions don't arise for us to allow. So in coaching or teaching them to be with what is, I was helping them avoid their buried emotions, but neither one of us knew it. And that's why triggers would continue. Now, they will diminish even if you don't get to buried emotions. You'll see triggers kind of diminish over time. Because if you sit there and watch the stuff come up, it can settle some things down. But what I'm saying to people is you have to be careful with spirituality. Because if you use spirituality to kind of let your triggers die down in awareness over and over, but you don't get to buried emotions, those buried emotions then are not being expressed. They may have to be expressed later as a disease, chronic pain, addiction. That's actually what I see on the spiritual path right there, is that people are really using spirituality to regulate themselves and a trigger to just feel better, more at peace, more expansive, but they don't get to buried emotions. And then either they just keep processing triggers because of that, they didn't get to the root, or there's more suffering coming down the road in another form. As the triggers get quieter, here comes the digestive issues or the porn addiction. And that's kind of how a lot of spiritual paths go, and yours might be like that too. It's like you might do some stuff and get some benefit from those practices, but there's still suffering, and now it's like this. And you don't know where it's coming from. And is my condition, my disease now, my chronic pain, is that connected to the triggers? 100%. But you see, it's like triggers will appear as emotional and psychological, I mean, repression, emotional repression will appear as a trigger or triggers. If we process those, it might just then appear as chronic pain because it has to keep us safe in some way. So it produces suffering. And we get our needs met through that suffering. It's safer, so we get the need of safety met by believing things that are false and avoiding the buried emotions that are true for us. If you could diagram this out, if you could imagine like looking at a screen, there are two people, and person A triggers person B. But if you could see somehow on the screen that person B has to hold anger back, so the anger never comes up in the trigger, and you can see it somehow buried in their body. Maybe there's a graphic there, you know, like some color that indicates the repression in their chest that's buried anger. But not, that never comes up in the trigger. And let's say the person processes in a certain way that trigger, but never becomes aware of the buried emotions that are creating the trigger and the identities. See that? And then the person feels a sense of peace or safety because they're being with the visible effects of this buried emotion that they're unaware of. And as those visible effects fall back into awareness, you look on the screen, they still have the buried anger. But at the surface, they're doing better. Now, if that person keeps doing that with every trigger, what happens? It's a continuous avoidance of that same buried emotion. It's truly a bypass. Or what I say, it becomes an avoidant path. It's not just a practice that you're doing that's avoidant. It becomes a path in which every time you're triggered, the way that you relate to phenomena is to avoid the buried emotions. And it's such an innocent mistake because how would you know if they're buried and then you rely on us teachers to tell you how to process things, but if we don't point to the buried emotions, then everybody's clueless as to why the trigger's there. And then you have to watch for non-duality because we'll say things like, well, the trigger comes because you believe in separation. Well, thanks, teacher. That doesn't get me any further or deeper or more awake than I was because I have no idea where the sense of separation is coming from or what that would be like to discover that because I'm just upset. You know, I'm triggered at my partner. I feel like they're not hearing me. And, you know, that's all I know in that moment. Because, well, a trigger self-protects. If we could really, really understand and appreciate what the suffering is doing for us and how it's keeping us safe, we wouldn't be so against it. We would allow it more, which is healthier, and then we would process the root of it once we understood what that is. But we can't even understand what it is when all we do is either allow a trigger in awareness or process the core limiting beliefs or identities that go with the trigger. That's equally a bypass because those are also coming from the buried emotions. The identities and core limiting beliefs, we create those unconsciously. We have to believe in those, again, to stay safe. So you see how focusing on things that are conscious, that are like at the tip of an iceberg, if you will, that you're aware of, whether you feel it or think it or believe it in a trigger, that's all appearing because your safety, your system produces it. It keeps you safe from what you're really feeling. And so if you're someone who doesn't get angry in a trigger, you're actually pissed in every trigger. That's how it works. And because it's buried, people will fool themselves, bamboozle themselves into thinking, no, I get upset sometimes. I get defensive. I allow it. I allow my anger. No, you don't. Defensiveness is not anger, nor is sensitivity or a trigger is also not necessarily anger at all. It could be that the buried anger creates the trigger that it could even create hurt or sadness for safety in a trigger to hold the anger back. The only way that an anger repressor ever discovers that the buried anger is driving the trigger is to get to the buried anger directly in the trigger, because it totally hides. And it hides so that when we're triggered, if we feel defensive or even frozen or shut down, it will convince us that we're not angry, because this other trauma response comes up. Freeze, flee. And then because that we freeze around the buried anger, if that's what it is, then we don't know. We're unconscious every time we're triggered to the fact that we're really upset and pissed at this person. And therefore the identities come and the core limiting beliefs come to distract us from that in our own system and bury that anger and keep it buried. And then show up at the surface as something other than anger. You see, that's all being done below the level of our consciousness. So we can't just sit here and be with what is and discover this. I'm telling you, if there's nothing else that you remember about this podcast, remember this. You cannot sit as awareness and see what's going on in a trigger, because the root of it is buried. And all that you're seeing is, again, safer than what you've buried. And so it's so distracting, and it's such a part of the bypass is what I'm saying. There are a few things that are really part of the bypass. One is like just processing triggers in that way. And also related to that is processing identity, core ego, which again arises because of the buried emotions. So if you focus on those things, you never get below the water of the iceberg to the core fear in the body creating all that. And it's an easy miss, because the identities we want to believe, we need to believe in those because they keep us safe. So we're focused and maybe even fixated on who we think we are in a trigger, or even who we think the other person is. That's another thing. When we're triggered, we'll slap a label on somebody, a shadow, because that keeps us safe from really feeling and expressing what's true. Like, in other words, if I call you a whatever, like you just don't listen, it could really be that I'm just angry at you, but I buried it. So it's easier for me just to say at the surface, I would say it in a different way. I would say, well, you're not listening to me, so I'm just not going to, I'm not even going to try. See, it feels defensive. But if it's an anger repressor, what's really going on is I'm just so fucking angry at you, but I can't express it. That's all unconscious. And at the surface, something else. Something else appears. And then I'm just talking about anger repressors now because I have the most experience with that. But there's a snake in the grass quality to being in a relationship with an anger repressor like I was. And I had this insight and I thought, these words are provocative. I don't know if I need to use these. But then I sat with it and I looked at all my relationships and I was like, no, I need to use these words, because I think people will, even if they're triggered by them, they'll see it once they start processing buried anger, and not a minute before that though, because this is really hidden. But anger repressors are like a snake in the grass in relationship, because we constantly have buried anger and we've convinced ourselves and you that we don't. And that's what makes us hiding in the grass. And then we do get triggered, but we don't express anger, so we're never really authentic. And if we pull away and process that trigger in some way, you can guarantee that we're not processing buried anger. And so we're going to come back to you and hide in the grass again with our false persona, like we're at peace and everything's okay. But at the unconscious level, no, everything is not okay, because we're still angry, but it's buried. And that makes us a snake in the grass perpetually. And somebody who you have to walk on eggshells around quite often. We have our own way of controlling people and even manipulating them in relationship when we bury anger, because we have to stay safe. We have to make sure that nobody gets us close to what we've buried, and yet we'll make it about them. Their anger. which reminds me of you poor, hurt, and saddest repressors in a relationship with us. But you're not innocent either. It's just that you might be more overtly angry if that's safer for you. And that's a trigger for we snakes in the grass. For us, what's the right way of saying that? For any snake in the grass who's an anger repressor, your anger is an issue. But it's also a scapegoat. We can focus on that. And that's part of our snake in the grass, is that we're there looking at you. And we're going to strike at you when you get angry at us. But it's not going to be a direct strike. It's going to be an ongoing resentment that we're going to harbor for you at a very unconscious level that we might not even be fully aware of at all. And that's what makes it a snake in the grass. And so I say to anger repressors, you're definitely creating suffering in your relationship. You've just hid it from yourself. And you have to discover how you're doing it to be free. Now, hurt and sadness repressors, they have a different thing with triggers. And everybody's different, so you can't group people into just these two groups. But this can help to hear this. If you're somebody who gets angry in a trigger, you're actually having a unique experience. Not everybody gets angry in triggers. Some people do. Anger repressors at the most might be upset, but they don't know anger yet. And you all do sometimes know how to feel and express anger if you repress hurt and sadness. And so I think the first thing I have to say is, gosh, you don't want to focus on the anger. It's the opposite of anger repressors. Because if you do, you may never get to the buried hurt in those triggers. And it's there. It's driving the trigger. It's why the anger is there. It's why the I'm wrong or I'm bad or I'm not good enough is there with the anger if it's there. It doesn't mean you can express the anger. Some of you can. Some of you can't. But you can feel it, many of you. And that's not your focus because that's safer than the buried hurt. So you use the anger if it's there. Trace it back to the conditioning in the body that says, I can't feel and express this hurt. Then you're at the root of your trigger. So if you're just meditating or being mindful as a hurt and sadness repressor, you definitely don't want to just rest and be with what is in a trigger. For the same reason an anger repressor doesn't want to, but your experience would be slightly different. If there's anger or something that's something different than what an anger repressor would experience, if you just allow or see or notice or dig a little bit and see some identities, you miss the buried hurt. In almost any form of just allowing or being with what is, you just miss buried hurt that doesn't arise. But worse than that, if you go digging into the body, if you're a hurt and sadness repressor, if you're not skillful, the hurt and sadness repression conditioning won't arise. And so you'll think you're really being free because you have some somatic freedom by digging around. But what you've done is you've just regulated your system. That's all you've done. And you might feel some more awareness or regulation, but again, you've left the buried hurt there. And worse than that is like you don't realize you're doing it. See, it's just like anger repressors. You keep doing it and you keep that stuff buried and those triggers keep coming. Or as a hurt and sadness repressor, somehow you allow all the anger and the triggers and it gets quieter over time and there's more presence, but then comes the disease. I've seen it. I've seen it, or the chronic pain. And you know, by the time we get to that place, yeah, then you want to do repression inquiry. That's how I had to. I had to get to that place. But for hurt and sadness repressors, if you can see right now that in your triggers, it has nothing to do with the anger and nothing to do with the core limiting beliefs or identities, except that they're arising to keep you safe. So to do anything other than allow them and get to the root, the buried hurt and sadness, is avoidance. And if you keep doing that, it becomes an avoided path. And now I'm just talking about awareness-based being with what is, but there's all kinds of other processes that equally don't get to buried emotions. You see, because in either case, we don't want to feel the buried emotions and the trigger. The whole point of the trigger is to protect us from that. So we're in a way, sort of very invested in any kind of practice or process that, one, regulates our nervous system, but two, does not make us have to feel the buried emotions. So we get trapped. See that? Because we don't get to the buried emotions, we have to keep regulating our system with our triggers. And that becomes its own kind of life sentence, to be in a relationship and have to manage your suffering that you're creating from buried emotions, but don't know it constantly. And our diseases and chronic pain are connected directly to our relationship issues and how we handle triggers. So usually when people are triggered in relationship from time to time, they also have other suffering in their life. It has the same root. But because that same root is buried, it's hard for people to connect that when they shut down or freeze with their husband, that's the reason they have chronic fatigue or depression. So triggers are really important in KI, but only in the beginning. Because, well, when people first get here, they just naturally gravitate towards processing triggers because that's what a lot of people do in spirituality. But that's a bypass. See, because, well, I've already explained it. So when they come here, it's like they see it all differently as they go deeper. They see that, yeah, if they process triggers in the beginning, they're just processing core beliefs that are being produced by repression. So they can't get the real freedom by just processing triggers. Waiting for a trigger to arise is like living your life in avoidance of buried emotions. And then when the buried emotions create disturbance, becoming interested in freedom. See that? And people do that. Like they won't establish an awareness practice. They won't even notice awareness at all until a trigger happens. Or they won't use inquiry until a trigger happens. But if you can understand that for a moment and why that was such a bypass for me when I used to do that, is if you imagine an iceberg, the trigger is something that appears at the surface because of the emotions that are buried under the water. So by processing the trigger at the surface, we avoid the buried emotions. And if you keep doing that, you keep avoiding, as I said. Well, people do that when they first get here and they are in that habit. But through mentorship, what we do is we have them turn away from the triggers and towards the buried emotions and especially the unmet needs in the body with the buried emotions that are producing that trigger. All right, let me explain that. Okay, so here's how that switch happens. Again, people naturally gravitate towards processing triggers because it's like the system gets disturbed. The day's going just fine until wife says this, and then trauma response. So it's natural to want to process that trauma response and get things back to sort of, you know, homeostatic balance, whatever that may be for you. But what you learn here is that the buried emotions and the unmet needs from childhood create the trigger. The simplest way of explaining it is this, I think. People first come to process the feeling of being unlovable in a trigger. As an example, it's like an identity. And that's an old identity that they felt since childhood, and they don't know yet that it's been there and they've been producing it unconsciously from the repression. It's safer to believe they're not lovable than it is to feel and express, let's say, buried hurt, if that's the dominant repression. See that? Even if you don't, even if it's not your direct experience, just kind of make that make sense for your second, for yourself for a moment. That it's just safer to believe these things about ourselves than to be authentic, to get angry at people. Now, if you understand that, then when people are processing identity and triggers, like I'm unlovable, they haven't yet seen that they created the trigger or how. But as they process the buried hurt, they find that they have a need for love. Hence, I'm unlovable comes up as a trigger. Then they see how they created the trigger because they needed love. But that's a need that isn't expressed and made conscious in a relationship. It's driving us. Because when we didn't get our needs met when we were kids, like love, we were angry or hurt, but we had to bury it. So here the person had to bury hurt when they didn't get their needs met when they were a kid. So when they don't get that need for love met in relationship, it comes up as a kid identity, an old one, like I'm unlovable. But that's kind of after the fact, because they're carrying around a need for love. It's like walking into a room and then needing that person's love. And because it's unconscious, it becomes a demand on the person to show up a certain way and give me what I need. It's just never spoken. And so that need, which is unconscious, becomes a demand, which then becomes a trigger. And when the person doesn't show up the way that we want to, but we don't express to them fully with boundaries and all, well, we'll feel unlovable. It's a natural offshoot of needing love and then projecting that out like that, but then not being authentic. See, the whole thing is authenticity. Because if I need love from you, if that's well known, if it's expressed, well, first of all, if it's conscious and expressed, it wouldn't be an unconscious need. See, because it's the fact that this is an unconscious need from childhood that makes us demand it from others and turn it into a trigger. But when love, the need for love is made conscious along with the buried hurt that's there, you find the love within instead of needing it, and then the triggers go away. You find what you were looking for within. The buried hurt makes us feel unlovable, like there's something missing, because there is something missing. The buried hurt is missing. It's buried. It's very simple that way if you understand it. And first, it's good to understand it and then, you know, process it. But the other key to that is once we see, we also, because of the buried hurt, we feel unsafe. And it's not conscious, but there's a need for safety there. People with buried hurt, they don't want you to hurt them. They want you to keep them safe, but they don't walk up in relationship or come into a room and say, hey, I have buried hurt and I need you to not to like hurt me or say anything. And if you do, you know, nobody does that who has buried hurt. So they walk into it with a need for love and for safety. And because it's so unconscious, the reason they need the safety is because the buried hurt is terrifying. It's not safe to walk around Earth like that. But they don't know that that's why they feel unsafe, and they might not even know that they feel unsafe. They just know they're suffering. See how easy that is to miss it? And then because these needs are right there in relationship, the moment that you do something, if I'm a hurt repressor who needs safety, but I'm not conscious of it, the moment you do something that comes too close to this buried hurt, guess what? Trigger. But it has more to do with my unmet needs and buried hurt than anything you're doing. And the fact that I can't see that means it's going to keep happening. And if I sit here and rest as awareness or do a lot of different forms of processing, I won't see it. Because buried emotions don't arise until we become skillful enough to prompt them up. And that's the story of triggers. We see that they're unmet needs. We make those needs conscious and see we have everything we need within us. And then we navigate relationship differently, not from triggers, which protected us, but from authenticity, which means, and I have to say this before I go, the thing we have to get out of our minds, if you have it in your mind, the idea of being liberated, but being somebody who doesn't feel and express emotion is a false projection. Here's why. The only way we can truly be liberated is to allow it all. So if there's any emotion that's being held back, that's suffering. So when you see somebody, I've even talked to AI about this to see if there's any kind of like anecdotal or other evidence for this. You know, can a person who's really free be angry and then be sad in the next moment, like really authentically? Yes, of course, because it's all allowed. Because we have repression, though, we might imagine that freedom would never look like emotion because we're against our emotions. We've buried them or we're resisting them. So we don't have a good and healthy view of emotion until we're freer, until we're living more authentically. When we have repression, we can't see the possibilities, the potential to truly own these parts of ourselves. And well, I'll leave you with this. I don't get triggered. And I want to say about triggers is that if you, as long as you don't have the bias that people shouldn't feel and express what's true, because that's a big bias that people have. It's like if you have any emotion, it's not acceptable. And that's just very restrictive and unhealthy. If you do repression work, you'll see it. So what you'll see and you'll experience is not trigger. After a while, the triggers will go away. Because if you're a hurt repressor, you will have tapped into that side of yourself. And that will have come into your experience in every relationship. So the very thing that you were protecting yourself from, you're not protecting yourself from the beginning of all relationships. So where's the trigger? The trigger came from you protecting yourself from the buried hurt. Deal with that buried hurt. There's no trigger. There's no need to protect yourself from that. See that? I know you can only understand it with the mind at first. And I hope that you understand that point too. Because some people will come here and listen and shake their head up and down and then go to the next thing. Because this podcast is just a pointer to what you've buried. And this podcast will not bring it into awareness either. It's pretty stubborn that way. I don't know if people come to work with me just because of triggers. If you can understand that your triggers are connected to this condition that you have and that contraction and this spiritual seeking, then you can understand it as part of a whole network of suffering. But if anything resonated here with regard to triggers in relationship, I put a link in the description that gives you two options. Speaking of relationship, my main and best offering is to come work with me one-on-one in some form of mentorship. I know after 8 years of development and having this work in the world, that's the best thing for people because our default conditioning keeps us in avoidance, many of us, until we have somebody there coaching us for a bit. If one-on-one mentorship is not your thing, in that same link, you'll see information about the Jumpstart group, which is how people are learning the work in a group setting. And that's a one-month group mentorship. And if you just want to sit back and listen to what we have to say, a bunch of really cool stuff is going to happen in 2025. So you can get on our newsletter by going and taking our test at repressiontest.com. And if you sign up for any of the services here that we're doing in the month of December, there's a discount for the holidays. Thank you.